On the more than one occasion, when Jesus uses a child, this case uses a child to become somewhat of an icon of God. I'm reminded of the quote from Meister Eckhart, the 13th century theologian, philosopher, and mystic. If I were alone in the desert and feeling afraid, I would want a child to be with me. For then my fear would disappear and I would be made strong. This is what life in itself can do because it is so noble, so full of pleasure, and so powerful. More about the child who makes an appearance in St. Mark's Gospel near the end of the homily. We think we know what counts as winning, doing better than other people. We think what counts as glory. Everyone telling us how great we are, treating us with great respect. I think we know what counts as power, being able to make things happen the way we want them. People obeying us when we tell them what to do. We want to be big rather than small, strong rather than weak, praised rather than blamed. It's normal to think like this. But as we have come to know, as Jesus teaches the disciples, begins to shape and form them as his disciples, once again, throws all of that out. And as it was in the first century, so it is in the 21st century, the Holy Gospel is countercultural. It's not that Jesus thought being killed was going to be the best day of his life, but where we would think it was the worst thing that could happen to us, Jesus doesn't seem to think so. What he knew and what he was up to was he knew there would be a cost, a price, in being obedient to the Father. And what God has intends, desires for us, what he through Christ was willing to do for us. If I tried to tell that to the disciples, they didn't know what he was talking about when he said he was going to be killed and was going to rise again. And then, as St. Mark details for us, they were afraid to ask him any further questions. St. Mark uses the word, notes that they were silent. Maybe it's partly because the last time they'd shown they didn't understand what Jesus was talking about, they got a bit of a telling off for being a bit dim-witted about this discipleship. They didn't want to understand, perhaps more than not really truly understanding. Because they knew what was going to come about as he shared with them. So instead, they talked about something sensible as they traveled toward Capernaum. They argued about which of them was the greatest. Now that's something very real that you can argue about, that gets us out of this strange countercultural world that Jesus is portraying, in which the best man they had ever met would be killed. Simply at this stage in their discipleship, they couldn't get their heads wrapped around this, couldn't get their hearts into it. So arguing about who's the greatest gets you back into that real world, countercultural again. Jesus, disciples, the church, not about competition, but it's about contribution. It's about being both big and small, at times, strong and weak, successful and unsuccessful. A saint, Blessed Mother Teresa, would say it's much more important to be faithful than to be successful. When Jesus asked them what they had been arguing about, they felt a bit ashamed. They felt ashamed because they knew that if they weren't thinking in the way that he was thinking, then they really weren't following him. And that was troublesome for them. They couldn't follow what he said, but more importantly, they didn't have the attitude that he had. So what did he do? He sat down. That's a very important point in St. Mark's Gospel. In the ancient days, the teacher would sit down. The learners, the students would continue to stand before them. Jesus sat down, as a teacher would do, to show that he had something very important to teach them. It's typical for Jesus. He turned it around. If you want to be first, make yourself last. He didn't say this just to get them upset. He simply wanted to tell them, this is the heart and the root of being my disciple. Being a good teacher, he used a visual aid. As St. Mark describes it, they were in a house and there must have been little tykes around. Now, I'm sure in the ancient world, just like today, when a little one comes into the world, there is that sense of excitement and joy. But in the ancient world, children would not have always been seen as charming little things. Children were understood as a burden until they could make themselves useful. So Jesus brings yet another countercultural surprise to them. Brings forth a little child. Someone who they would have thought was no use to anyone. Then he says to them, welcome this child, and you'll welcome me. By the way, if you welcome me, you'll welcome the God who is my Father. So as I mentioned early on, he chose this child as a very icon of God. It shows that God does not think in the competitive way the disciples were tempted to think, the way Christ's disciples in our own day at times are tempted to think. The child was simply there, being lifted up. No use to anyone. No use to anyone, but simply being loved by God. Precious in his sight. That's what our Christian vocation, our Christian discipleship is all about. It's allowing Jesus to call us into his crazy world. This crazy world of both death and glory, being weak and strong, being a leader, and yet that means being a servant. And the least among you, a little child, most precious in God's eyes. No wonder they remained silent, not daring to ask him any more questions, because that's going to turn the tables. It's going to turn the tables, at least for half the world, and make them be labeled failures, be despised, written off, saying that obedience to Christ is what sets you free. That refusing to possess other people is what makes you happy. That not always having control over your life at times can make you even more human. I remembered as we reflected and meditated a bit on this child in their midst, I remembered a rather informal study that was done with young folks. It really was an interview. And they were asked, what would you consider, list them in preference, what would you consider to be a blessed life? Now these were those who were just about ready to go into the world of work. Well, guess what number one is? Lots of money. Number two, good health. Number three, good health benefits. Next, a secure future. High paying position in a secure company. A large IRA. Secure retirement. This one I love. Model children. And there was usually a number of model children assigned to that. Last but not least, no worries. Good luck with that one, right? Well, the very first thing when I read the list and it was associated with an article, the very first thing I thought about was, let's not ever think that our children are not listening to us at home, around the supper table. Also, feeling the stress of life that we feel at times. The second thing I thought about was connected to this gospel. What's missing on their list? What's missing on this list? Give it some thought. And then I let my imagination go a little bit further and thought to myself, I wonder if Jesus sat down and made all those young folks stand before him, what would he say to them? What would he teach them?